Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live here in Pensacola, Florida. Beautiful day. A little warm today, Jonathan. Were you out there? It was, got a little warm today. But, hey, beats 110 or 20 like they're having in Phoenix or whatever it is right now. Okay, today's date is the 19th, July the 19th of 2005, and you are listening to the Truth Radio program from the Creation Science Evangelism on truthradio.com, or they can, is it linked from ours, Jonathan? They can go to drdino.com and get the information. They can't, it's not linked to it, though. Okay. Have to go to truthradio.com and listen in. So you're probably listening there now. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Absolutely dumb to believe you came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. And you can join us on the program today by calling 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or 877-479-DINO, and then go to extension 136. If you call in the next half hour, while the secretaries are still manning the phones in there, actually womaning the phones, you can ask them for a free booklet called Are You Being Brainwashed by Your Science Book? And they'll send you one of those free of charge to show some of the dumb things that are used to support the evolution theory. And we'd be glad to get you one of those right away. But you have to call before 5 when they leave. After that, you can just go to extension 136 and take you straight onto the program, and we'll take your questions. We defend the Bible as being literally true and scientifically accurate, and evolution theory as being dumb, real dumb. I taught high school science for 15 years, and now I've been doing seminars for 16 years on the subject of creation and evolution. And we are concerned about a technical problem here. Jonathan, are you sure we're on?
Yeah.
You're listening? You're listening to it? We are on. Okay, good. You can also AOL instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. And we would like to burst the bubble of some of those who think scientists are, you know, flawless and never make mistakes. We have, let's see, where is all that? I may have to get that during the break, Jonathan. I think I was reading those last night and left it in the other room. Okay. I have an article here, though. I can't believe this when I read it. I thought, this guy can't be this stupid. Here it is. His Aching Back is the name of the article from... Love it when they send me stuff and you can't tell what newspaper it comes from. Los Angeles Times. Here we go. The date is also cut off of here. Let's see. Yep. No way to tell where it came from. But it's definitely a newspaper article. I thought that would give it some credibility. But you found it. Good. Okay. Just one. Okay. I got the rest in there. I was reading them last night. Here we go. David Barash, B-A-R-A-S-H, from the Los Angeles Times, writes this amazingly non-thought-out article. Okay? Here we go. In 1829, Francis Henry Egerton, the 8th Earl of Bridgewater, bequeathed £8,000 sterling to the Royal Society of London to pay for publication of works on the power, wisdom, and goodness of God as manifest in the creation. The resulting Bridgewater treatises, published between 1833 and 1840, were classic statements of natural theology seeking to demonstrate God's existence by examining the natural world's perfection. And then this guy, Jonathan, goes on for the next two pages in this article, saying how, look, the world is not perfect. Like, humans have backaches. Do you realize that? People have backaches. Yours is hurt.
Mine's hurt just a little bit right now.
But you wrestled for, what, 400 years and...
12.
12 years?
Yeah, 12.
Did that hurt your back?
A lot, yeah. Not smart. It was fun for the time, but you pay for it for the rest of your life.
Right,
so.
Right. Like football, too, you know. Daddy gets a lot of fun out of watching the boys get out there and, you know, bang around, and they got knee problems the rest of their life. Anyway, this David Barash from the Los Angeles Times says, we have back troubles. That proves we came from an ape. Here we go. Consider the human body, he says. Ask yourself, if you were designing the optimum exit for a fetus, would you engineer a route that passes through the narrow confines of the pelvic bones? Add this to the tragic reality that childbirth is not only painful in our species, but downright dangerous and sometimes lethal, owing to a baby's head being too large for the mother's birth canal. This design flaw is all the more dramatic because anyone glancing at a skeleton can see immediately there is plenty of room. Where's page 5? Where is it? For the most stubbornly large-brained, misoriented fetus to be easily delivered anywhere in that vast, non-bony region below the ribs.
This is amazing. Actually, Dr. David Minton, who is a physiologist, anatomist, you know, really brilliant guy, really humble Christian, just did a lecture called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, where he talks about the development of a fetus and or the development of a child and, you know, the birth of one. And he goes through and explains how the pelvic muscle or the pelvic bone of a woman is built so amazingly for this. There are tendons on there that can separate just a little bit to allow it room to come through. You twist it just perfectly, it, you know, comes right out. Yeah, it's painful. The Bible says it's going to be painful. But he shows how it, regardless of what this guy says, this is an anatomist, Dr. David Minton, saying this, that it all works together so beautifully.
Well, to think about it, he says we are poorly designed, and that's proof, therefore, of what? Well, that's proof that there's no designer. It all happened by chance.
Shouldn't we expect to see more optimal things? I mean, if we've got 4.5 billion years of evolution basically going on here, 3 billion years or whatever they want to say it is for life, shouldn't we really be shocked to see problematic things like that, if it is indeed problematic? I mean, should childbirth bearing be so messed up, according to this guy, if indeed it's been going for millions and millions of years?
Well, it's when people say things are not designed well, it's a result of their lack of knowledge of why it's designed that way. You know, like, why is it that way? He says we have back trouble because we used to walk on 4 legs like the apes, and we've slowly, you know, developed upright posture. And here this David Barash is a professor of physiology at the University of Washington and co-author of Madame Bovary's Ovaries. There's a good book. Everybody had to rush out and buy. I'm sure it's on the world's bestseller list. So, he says, the profound imperfect human body is the best evidence against intelligent design. Well, David, call into the program. We'll be glad to straighten you out, okay? We are a copy off of a copy off of a copy off of a copy off of a copy of Adam. And it's lucky we're even here. You're fortunate we can even stand here and talk about it, okay? The fact that this incredible gene code has been passed down so many times and is still working pretty good is testimony to the original being amazing. There's no telling what all that original could do. Okay, anyway, so we believe in creation and evolution's dumb, and if you want to call in the program, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or you can instant message us at AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live, and we're reading a case summary here, Jonathan, from Bernard Hoffman, Ph.D., February 24th of 2004, from the Office of Research Integrity, ORI, dot, what was it again,
HDDS, or DHSS, DHHS.gov.
www.ori.dhhs.
No, there's no www on that.
There's no www?
Nope, the ORI replaces that.
Wow. You have to explain that to me someday. Okay. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Here we go. Notice is hereby given that the Office of Research Integrity and the Acting Assistant Secretary for Health have taken final action in the following case. Bernd Hoffman, Ph.D., University of Medicine and Dentistry at New Jersey, based on 2 inquiry investigation reports from the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, additional analysis conducted by ORI in its oversight review, the U.S. Public Health Service found that Bernd, B-E-R-N-D, Hoffman, former postdoctorate fellow and adjunct assistant professor, Department of Pharmacology at UMDNJ, engaged in scientific misconduct. Can you believe it? In research supported by National Institutes of Health, NIH. Grant. He got a grant for this.
Money.
Yeah. All respect to money. See, oftentimes the people who issue the grant say, here's what I would like the research to turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this new drug I developed that will grow hair on a cue ball, and I want you to, you know, make your, oh, here, I'm going to pay you $100,000 to test it for me and make sure, you know, that you say it grew hair on the cue ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it did or didn't, doesn't matter. You know, we wanted to say that.
Yeah.
There is so much lying, deceit in this, man. Follow the money, the yellow brick road. Okay, PHS found that Dr. Hoffman engaged in scientific misconduct by falsifying and fabricating research data in a manuscript entitled, Big Name, required for dynein-mediated vesicle transport on microtubules, had been submitted to the Journal of Cell Biology. Falsified date values on the second line from the bottom of table 4, for example, and he gives some examples here. He falsified data by erasing a band of approximate molecular width 15 kD from figure 5A. And he falsified a related movie film available on the internet by alternating the movement of the vesicles. This, can you believe a PhD? I mean, there's a whole other page of things that he falsified, okay? His punishment was, listen to the punishment, Jonathan. Have you read any of these punishments on here?
Not that one, no.
He entered into a voluntary exclusion agreement in which he voluntarily agreed for a period of 3 years to exclude himself from any contracting or subcontracting with any agency of the United States government and from eligibility or involvement in non-procurement programs of the United States government referred to as covered transactions as defined by the debarment regulations of 45 CFR Part 76. He agreed to exclude himself from serving in any advisory capacity to PHS, including, but not limited to, service on any PHS advisory committee, board, or peer review committee as a consultant, and he agreed to draft a letter of retraction and send it to ORI along with the signed agreement. So that's it. He can't work for the government, he can't work for PHS, and he has to write a letter of retraction. So he's probably still out there working for some other company.
Probably not making as much. I don't know.
Falsifying the data,
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, this works and this works. And can you believe people would actually lie to for who knows whatever reason?
Well, there's the I just gave you the link right there to quite a bit more of those if you want to check out some of those as well.
ORI, Office of Research Integrity.
If anybody would like the list of the all of these different case summaries right here, they can go ahead and send an instant message to Dr. Dino Live. DrDinoLive, and I'll be more than happy to paste a link to them so that they can view these as well.
Sad. And yet we got atheists and evolutionists that call in and say, well, you creationists, you know, you don't publish in peer-reviewed journals. What good would it do? First of all, they're not going to publish it if it comes from a Christian, okay, or creationist perspective. That's been seen over and over and over. Secondly, peer-reviewed doesn't guarantee anything,
mm-hmm.
you know. Government grants don't guarantee anything. Look at these guys. Lie about their stuff. All right. Well, okay. If you want to be on the program, call in 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. I have a bunch hanging from yesterday, Jonathan. I'm sorry. I have not been keeping up. Lard Starr wrote to us and says, I was wondering if you know anything about the Bible and ghosts. I saw a video clip showing ghosts caught on film. Lard, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
Sorry, I have seen some of those kind of things on TV and don't know what to think about it. Okay, who's on the phone there, John? Push all the buttons.
Yep, we've got Mary White.
Mary White. I think that's break time, isn't it? I don't hear the music. Okay, yes, Mary, go ahead.
I understand the assumptions that go into it, and the carbon dating and all the other kinds of dating.
Mary, we can't hear you. Can you talk louder or get closer to your mic or something?
Yeah. I understand the assumptions that go into, like, the carbon dating and all the other kinds of dating.
Okay.
But I was just wondering what the ulterior theory is to why the dates are actually so large. Like, what would cause them to be so large?
What would cause the numbers to be so large?
Yeah, millions of years.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, if you watch a piece of potassium decay, it turns into argon gas and... It takes, the whole thing is an estimate, and I think it's reasonable, but if they take a sample of potassium and they watch it decay for 5 days or 10 days in the laboratory, then they say, oh, wow, you know, 0.0000002% decayed mm-hmm. in 10 days, so it must take 1 billion years for half of it to decay.
Mm-hmm.
It's called an extrapolation. I don't know how old you are, what level math you've had, but that's perfectly normal to extrapolate. Like if you watched, three apples fall off the tree every hour, you could guess how long it's going to take all the apples to fall off. Hang on, Mary, we got a break. We'll be back after the break, okay? Can you hang on?
Sure.
We'll be right back in a minute and a half.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
Welcome back to the lives of incredibly important people. We have in the studio today Theodore Hallister, who will provide insight to the life of his father, Robert Ace Hallister.
Thanks. I don't know why you want to talk about my dad.
Well, people generally want to know anything they can about really important people like Nobel Peace Prize winners.
My dad won a Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes, General Hallister was famous for his peace treaties.
My dad was a general?
Yes, in the Army. You didn't know that?
Well, we moved a lot. I just thought he really liked to wear green. How do you know all this?
Why, it's in your father's autobiography.
He wrote a book?
Yes, it was on the bestsellers list 4 months in a row. Millions read his book, My Life After Conquering Everest.
My dad climbed a mountain?
I take it you didn't really get to know your dad.
God is present and active in your life. Are you taking time to really know him? A message from Lifeline Productions, 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind, Jonathan Sampson, live this July 19th, 2005. We've got Mary on the phone, and you can call in and join us here as soon as Mary's done at 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Or you can instant message us right now at Dr. Dino Live, AOL, instant message Dr. Dino. Okay, Mary, you're asking about the big numbers for dating, carbon dating, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying, if you can extrapolate, which is perfectly fine in mathematics, if, three apples fall off your tree every hour, and you look up there and count, there's 30 apples on the tree, you could say, well, it's possibly going to take 10 hours for all of them to fall, okay? Even though you don't watch it for 10 hours, you just watch it for a short time. They do that with all these dating methods. They will watch a sample like potassium or carbon-14 or uranium or whatever, and they test it in the laboratory for a short time, and then they extrapolate and say, well, probably it would take so many million years for half of it to be gone. It is a guess, and certainly there are many things that can influence that and cause it to be wrong. But let's assume that it's true that potassium decays to argon, and half of it happens every 1.3 billion years, which is what the textbooks say. Well, there still are numerous other things they're missing. There are some things that don't decay at all, okay? They're just always the same. Also, it's a decay. It's never an advancement. It's always going downhill, not uphill. So that's the opposite of what evolution needs. Okay? It's decaying or going backwards. Thirdly, there are so many things that can enter into contaminate it or speed up the process, etc. When you look at the actual results, in spite of all the theory, when they tested lava from Mount St. Helens, they used 5 different samples and got 5 different numbers. From 350,000 years to 2.8 million years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was fresh lava from Mount St. Helens. It should have been zero.
But most of them come out to be the same numbers, don't they?
No. They get wild numbers all the time. There's a book put out by ICR.org. It's called The RATE Project, R-A-T-E, which is Radioactive Isotopes and the Age of the Earth. They did a five-year study, wasn't it, Jonathan, on the RATE? 5 years they did the RATE Project. Just amazing. It never, carbon dating and potassium argon dating never give the right number.
Hmm.
It's just a bunch of smoke and mirrors, I think.
So it's not like necessarily because of the way that the Earth was before the flood that causes the numbers to be high?
The flood would have altered all sorts of things, radically changed everything. Certainly erosion rates would be really changed, and the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would change radically. I mean, if all the trees are buried, gone for a year, that's going to upset, you know, the gas concentration in the atmosphere of various gases. So, yeah, in spite of all the theory behind the dating methods, none of them have been demonstrated to be right. They always give wild numbers, and all of these dating methods were invented in the last 50 years. They had already decided 150, 180 years ago, you know, how old they wanted the world to be. So, in reality, these dating methods mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It goes by the geologic column.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Where are you calling from, Mary?
I'm in Pensacola.
In Pensacola. Well, good. Have you been to our dinosaur adventure land yet?
Yes, I have once.
Once. Well, we add stuff every day. You need to come back.
Okay.
All right. Come on back. Thanks a lot, Mary.
Yeah.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, if you want to join the program, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. There we go. I did not get to finish the one from Lord Skylark, who wrote in. This reminded me of a question that I asked before. Why are the apocryphal books from Daniel, in which he kills the dragon, not included in the Bible? Did that not happen? I know it was used in the seminar tape, and you said it wasn't scripture. What was the reason it's not considered scripture? Boy, now, I don't know that I have an answer to that one. Why were the extra two chapters in Daniel? The first one is called, there's Bel and the Dragon, and I guess Bel is the first chapter. Chapter 13, I think, is about some guy who sprinkles dust on the floor and he catches the footprints of the people. They put food in there, and he said the bad guy says the idols are eating this food, which proves they're alive. They come alive at night and they eat the food. Well, the truth is they had a trap door, and these guys were coming up through the trap door and go eating the food and then going back through the trap door. So to prove that they were lying, who are Bel or I forget the story exactly, it's in a Catholic Bible, chapter 13, he put the food in there and then sprinkled dust all over the floor and then left. Next morning when he came in, the food was gone, but there were footprints all over leading to this secret trap door. So that's how they were discovered. And then the dragon is about Daniel killing the dragon with the feeding it to hair and pitch and fat. And that's covered in chapter 14. Why it's not scripture, I guess I can't answer that. If anybody knows, maybe you can let me know why. I can't answer that. Sorry about that. Crowdster fan had written in and said, with all the suicide bombings happening every day around the world, I'm really beginning to question the value of the Islam religion at all. Good. Me too. See, you cannot be a good Muslim unless you are willing to kill anybody who is not Muslim. That's what their book teaches. It's required of their religion to kill anybody who won't convert. There are 100 verses in the Quran that require people to kill anyone who won't convert to Muslim, to become Muslim, to be Islam. So, you're not going to fix this problem unless you get these people converted to a real Christianity. Don Boyes has a good book on that called Islam, the Trojan Horse, I think is the title. Go to his website, which is, Don was on the program, Jonathan. You remember his website, Common Sense for Today, CST, CST.org, I think. Common Sense for Today, CST.com.org.
I have no idea. You know, but regarding the whole Muslim situation, I got an email today from Frank over at ICR.
Yeah.
Passed out. Apparently someone sent him an email, and he sent it on to his friends. And it starts out, it says, what's all the fuss? I don't know. Do I have a second just to
sure, go ahead,
about
yeah.
the Muslims?
Yeah.
Okay, this is, let me get everything fixed here. It starts out, this was not original with Frank either. It was sent to him by somebody else, and he just passed it on. It says, "What's all the fuss? Are we fighting a war on terror, or aren't we? Was it or was it not started by Islamic people who brought it to our shores on September 11, 2001? Were people from all over the world, mostly Americans, not brutally murdered that day in downtown Manhattan, across the Potomac from our nation's capital, and in a field in Pennsylvania? Did nearly 3,000 men, women, and children die a horrible burning or crushing death that day, or didn't they? Am I supposed to care that a copy of the Quran was desecrated when an overworked American soldier kicked it or got it wet? Well, I don't. I don't care." Because apparently there was some commotion, some Muslim had gotten just fire-hearted because someone desecrated his holy Quran. And so,
first place, the Quran is not holy. It's an evil book, okay? That guy wrote a book, Satanic Verses, you know, about the Quran. They I don't know if they ever killed him or not, but they sure tried. He was in hiding for years, whoever wrote that book. The title was called Satanic Verses.
And it goes on to say, "I'll start caring when Osama bin Laden turns himself in and repents for incinerating all those innocent people on 9/11. I'll care about the Quran when the fanatics in the Middle East start caring about the Holy Bible, the mere possession of which is a crime in Saudi Arabia. I'll care." That's interesting. They want us to respect this book when they completely don't even respect our book over in their area. They'll kill you
right.
if you even have it.
Or if you convert somebody to become a Christian, then they kill you too.
Yeah, that's pretty hypocritical right there.
Yeah, but they want us to convert, you know, accept their book.
Says that I'll care when Abu Musab al-Zarqawi tells the world he is sorry for hacking off Nick Berg's head while Berg screams through his gurgling slash throat. I'll care when the cowardly so-called insurgents in Iraq come out and fight like men instead of disrespecting their own religion by hiding in mosques. I'll care when the mindless zealots who blow themselves up in search of nirvana come about the innocent children, or care about the innocent children within range of their suicide bombings. I'll care when the American media stops pretending that their First Amendment liberties are somehow derived from international law instead of the United States Constitution Bill of Rights. And he just goes on to say, I'll skip down to the very bottom here. He says, in the meantime, when I hear a story about a brave Marine roughing up an Iraqi terrorist to obtain information, know this, I don't care. When I see a fuzzy photo of a pile of naked Iraqi prisoners who have been humiliated in what amounts to a college hazing incident, rest assured that I don't care. When I see a wounded terrorist get shot in the head when he is told not to move because he might be booby-trapped, you can take it to the bank, I don't care. When I hear that a prisoner who was issued a Quran and a prayer mat and fed special food that is paid for by my tax dollars is complaining that his holy book is being mishandled, you can absolutely believe in your heart of hearts that I don't care. Oh, and by the way, I've noticed that sometimes it's spelled Quran with a K, and other times Quran with a Q. Well, Jimmy Crack Corn, and you guessed it, I don't care.
So. That's cute. Well, see, 1972, the Islamic idiots killed the Israeli athletes at the Olympics. In 1979, the Islamic idiots killed the U.S. Embassy in Iran, kept 52 hostages for over a year. Anyway, it's bad. Okay, we'll be back, folks, after the break. Join us at drdino.com.
Pitch from Mallory. Curveball, strike two.
When life throws you a curve.
Bottom of the third, here's the 2-2 fastball.
It's
deep to center.
Hit a home run. Here's Rise Above with Rob Rosenboom.
Showing his friend around the house, Fred started to point out all of the collectibles he and his wife had acquired over their long years of marriage. The day before I die, I'd like to sell every piece we've got just to see how much it's all worth. But you couldn't possibly know the day before you were going to die, so how could you sell it? Simple. If I sell it, my wife would kill me. It's true, no one knows the exact moment they'll die, but the fact is everyone will eventually. But those who find trust in Jesus will live forever in paradise. Rise above and think about it.
Rise Above with Rob Rosenboom is a production of Rise Ministries at RiseMinistries.com and is made possible by Rob's alma mater, Northwestern College, a distinctly Christian liberal arts college in Orange City, Iowa. Visit nwciowa.edu.
in tune with www.truthradio.com. You may at times find us elsewhere, but always www.truthradio.com. That's where we live. We visit other places, but this is where we always are. Stay tuned. David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers. These people are very well-intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs, Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote is somehow living and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong. They would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as some being authoritative.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July the 19th of 2005. And you can call in and join us on the program, 850-479-DINO, like a dinosaur. Our website is drdino.com or dinosauradventureland.com, or you can come visit us at Dinosaur Adventureland in Pensacola, Florida. Check the weather, make sure there's no hurricanes, and otherwise it should be fine. We love it down here. But we were talking about Islam and how the article Jonathan read about how the guy says, I don't care, Jimmy Crackcorn, I don't care. In 1983, the Marine barracks in Beirut were blown up, killing 241 U.S. soldiers by, guess who? Islamic infidels. Okay. 1988, the Pan Am flight was bombed, killing 270 people. In 1993, the first bombing of the World Trade Center was done, all of this by the Islamic idiots. Okay. 1998, the U.S. embassies bombed in Kenya and in Tanzania, 200 dead and 4,000 people injured. 2001, the World Trade Center reduced to rubble, 3,000 people dead. You can't deal with people who believe that kind of stuff. We have to change their basic belief system. Got to get them converted to Christianity. That's the solution. Okay, who we got on the phone there, Jonathan?
We've got Kurt from Tucson.
Kurt, go ahead.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing great.
I listened to you a little bit last week, and yeah, I think you were talking about you were talking about the issue of abortion a little bit, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But at the same time, I assume you're pro death penalty, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir.
Okay. How do you reconcile those two, biblically speaking?
Man is responsible, according to Genesis chapter 10, right after the flood. God gave. I'm getting a ring back here, Jonathan. It's your phone. It's his phone. Okay. Do you have your speakers turned up, or it's coming back through?
I'm way out in the other room here. I'll go outside here. Can you hear? Is everything okay now?
Okay. Now, I guess when I talk, I hear it.
Yeah. We can hear ourselves because it's feeding back. Are you on cordless phone right now?
Yes, I am.
I think that might be what's causing it.
The wonders of technology. Anyway,
I can call you back on my cell phone if that works better.
Can you hear us? Okay.
I can hear you all again.
All right. Abortion. Killing an unborn child is very different than killing someone who commits certain crimes. God told Noah in the Bible when they got off the ark in Genesis chapter 10, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed." In other words, you need to set up a system of government where if someone commits a certain crime, they are executed by the humans on the planet.
But that was the Old Testament law that Jesus came to fulfill that by having love and forgiveness for people like he did with the woman who was caught in adultery. The law said to stone her, but he said, go and sin no more. I don't condemn you.
Oh, no. Jesus said, whoever hasn't sinned, you cast the first stone. He didn't say she shouldn't be stoned. He said, none of you here are capable of carrying out this judgment because you've all sinned.
Well, okay, then how could you, who I've also sinned, condemn somebody else to the death penalty?
Well, the Bible clearly...
Have the same compassion for somebody else? I mean, we can... Yeah. accept somebody for being in, to be in prison for the rest of their adult life, I suppose. And at the same time, you could say, well, that's a good reason to try to win them to Christ while they're still alive instead of ending their life early. I mean, if their soul is in danger of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And I do that. Okay, I do put my money where my mouth is. We donate many thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to prisons to donate materials on creation. Books and videos, we send them free of charge and have for 15 years. So we want to win these guys to Christ. That's certain.
I mean, you don't know when God might, you know, speak to them or whatever in their heart. And, you know, so you have to, if they die before that time comes, then and their soul might go to hell, right?
That's correct. But see, it's multiple sides of this thing to look at. One, you have to look at it from the criminal's perspective. You know, he deserves opportunity to accept Christ. I agree. Also, you have to look at it from the victim's perspective. They deserve some peace and serenity in their life. If someone breaks into your house and rapes your wife and kills her or kills your children, you are going to be haunted the rest of your life, and it's going to really help bring some healing to you if that person is executed. For you to know he's alive in prison someplace with the possibility of escaping or, worse yet, you know, being let out to come after you or come after somebody else, or, you know, the pain and agony and mental anguish you would go through knowing someone destroyed your family, an innocent family, and this person, just for whatever reason, for sex or money or whatever, destroyed them. You
well,
deserve...
That's where the forgiveness of Christ comes in, and the...
I agree.
Realization that we all have sinned, so how can you condemn somebody else when we all have sinned? Just like going back to that analogy, or that verse in the Bible where Jesus said to Bartimaeus,
I understand.
Not sin cast the first stone. We also have to look at the fact that we have not all lived a perfect life either. So
I understand, but the position you're taking is the position the Amish and Mennonite have taken. I was raised Mennonite, you know, and it has been proven that at some point everybody will retaliate. That's a natural thing. You have a right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You have a right to defend yourself. See, there are two types of wars. There are wars of aggression, where you are trying to steal something from somebody else, and there are wars where you are defending yourself against the aggressor. Wars of aggression are wrong. For you to go into your neighbor's yard and steal their stuff is wrong. But for you to defend your property or your family against your neighbor who's trying to do that is perfectly fine. That is seen over and over and over in the scriptures. So I said there are multiple ways to look at this. You have to look at it from the criminal's perspective. You have to also look at it from the victim's perspective. Thirdly, you have to look at it from the victim's family's perspective. And fourthly, for the good of society. If there is no punishment for someone doing evil, then evil runs rampant. Yeah, but if people...
Putting somebody behind bars forever is punishment. But you can still save their soul while they're alive.
Well, but see, now you're forcing everybody on the planet, or everybody in the country, to pay for that person's groceries and medical supplies and room and board while they're put behind bars.
Okay, that goes back to, I mean, and I'm not saying that everybody who would have been aborted goes on to be a criminal, but I'm sure a lot of them probably do. So what you're doing is you're saying, okay, well, we have to allow everybody to be born, and then what's their lifestyle or the way they were brought up culminates into a life of... a criminal lifestyle, they were paying for it when, in actuality, if you would have just allowed the person to not have the child in the first place, we wouldn't have had the problem. Then their victim wouldn't have been there in the first place anyway, so they would have saved another life that way.
Yeah, there's no possible way you could know something like that.
Well, you don't know that, but I mean, if somebody doesn't want a child, it's a pretty good indication that that person probably won't be a good parent to that child.
Well, the number of people wanting to adopt is equal to the number of abortions every year.
Right. I mean, and in that case, if there was a definite good family to adopt a child, then I'm for that. But I'm not saying, but I don't know how it works in all the situations and why they don't work it that way.
Well,
but obviously
see,
it doesn't, because a lot of people...
Okay, if someone...
They don't enjoy their kids and they...
Well, then the parents ought to be executed, not the children.
What's that, huh?
Then the parents ought to be executed, not the children. Why don't we ever abort the mother?
Why don't we abort the mother?
Yeah.
Well, we probably should, too, sometimes.
or abort the father. If the father's not going to take care of this, you know, some girl gets raped and the guy, you know, he doesn't want to raise that child, so he leaves and she's stuck with the baby and she decides to have an abortion. Well, let's abort the father. Let's abort the mother. Why is it always the baby has to die?
Yeah, I mean, those are situations that you have to deal with on an individual basis. But I'm just saying, how many people who are for abortion spend time trailer park witnessing, you know, spending time around these people who are being raised by these parents who are, you know, don't really want the children to begin with and aren't good parents?
Well, you know, this goes back
really
to...
It's really easy to say, you know, I'm for abortion. It's a really cheap way of trying to look like you're standing there.
It seems like the logical thing is, if a person doesn't want a child, then keep themselves away from sex. I mean, why are you going to play
children
with a bullet if you don't want to get shot in the hand?
I missed that first part.
If someone doesn't want a child, then they shouldn't be out fornicating.
They should not.
No, of course not.
If somebody doesn't want a child, they should what?
They should not be out having sex if they don't want a child.
Well, I mean, that's kind of tough. That's, you know, I mean, you know, that you guys are probably also not for handing out birth control things, are you?
No, I'm for everybody doing what God says, because see, when people engage in premarital sex, it destroys their marriage later in life. God's not trying to keep something from his children by saying, save yourself for marriage. He's trying to make you have a wonderful life.
But the thing is, not everybody comes to that conclusion in life at the proper time. Right?
Well, they should. That's
they should.
Kurt, don't you think it's completely irresponsible for someone to have unprotected sex if they're going to have sex and then later on get pregnant and say, oh, I don't want it, let's just kill it, because I screwed up in the first place? Now, why do we pretty much...
Everybody screws up, and that's where I was going back to. How many people who are for abortion actually spend time witnessing to these people in trailer parks, probably where a lot of this happens to begin with? How many people actually do that? If they did that, we probably wouldn't have this big problem that we have today with it. But it's a really cheap way of saying, I'm for something that's right, but just by standing up against...
Well, now, wait a minute.
...to abortion.
You've got an inconsistent position here. What if the government consistently executed people who raped other people?
Who raped other people?
Yeah. What if rapists were executed? They are in some countries.
Yeah.
Okay. And the rapists...
probably they are here, too.
Okay. The rate of women who are being raped in those countries is extremely low, because it's a real deterrent for the dad to tell his son, hey, if you rape that girl, you're going to be executed. Or when they go to a public execution where they, you know, kill somebody for rape, it really is a deterrent. There is no such deterrent in America.
You're probably talking about Muslim countries, aren't
you? There are other countries who do it, too. That's just part of their culture.
Which one?
I don't know. There's 240 countries in the world.
I think most of them are Muslim countries that are for that law, though. Right? You were just arguing against Muslims here.
Oh, Muslim religion is silly in many, many reigns, in many, many areas. What they believe is done.
But it's good in this area, right?
It may be good in that area. I don't know. Certain crimes, the Bible clearly teaches, people should be executed, and that would be good for society. So rather than solve the problem...
Old Testament says that.
Well, rather than solve the unwanted child problem by killing the child, let's get society in line where we start executing rapists, and then the problem diminishes greatly. Or let's start teaching the women how to dress so they're not so trying to... You know, my daddy always said, if you're not in business, don't advertise.
That's a big problem down here, too, son.
Sure. Well, that gets hot.
But I mean, what do you do with the new law that Jesus brought, which is to love and forgive, and you get away with the law?
I think we should. On an individual basis, we should. Now, there's a different level, which is from a society basis. For the good of society, you have to have laws and rules that are maintained. Why don't we just forgive everybody who speeds, or everybody who steals, or everybody who lies or cheats on an exam? Why do we have any rules at all?
Yeah, but those are a little bit different than this one here. I mean, if you allow somebody to not have a child and then doesn't grow up to become a criminal anyway, then that solves part of the problem right there. At the beginning, instead of waiting, you know, 20 years later.
I don't know. What if that child grows up and, you know, destroys hunger throughout, you know, throughout the complete earth, and you just murdered someone who could have done something amazing.
Or finds the cure for some dreaded disease, or becomes the president of a company. You don't know what they're going to do. There's no way to tell. People come from real lousy backgrounds and become great people. And people come from incredible backgrounds where they have a silver spoon in their mouth and become Bill Clinton, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think James Robinson. You know who James Robinson is?
No.
Oh, he has a Live Today program. Yeah, he was an illegitimate child, and he turned out pretty good. Yeah, I mean, you don't know that for sure, but what I'm saying is it should be up to the individual person. And I think what Genesis 2:9 it says something about God spirit into man after he formed him. So I think that's a good argument to show that the soul doesn't really start in a human being anyway, probably until it's out of the womb.
Now, the Bible says man became a living soul.
He said God created man, and then God breathed the spirit into him.
He formed his body from the dust.
After he formed him, right.
Well, in Genesis chapter 16, God said to Hagar, "Thou art with child and shalt bear a son." It's a child before it's even born. If you look at the story of Jesus and John the Baptist, you know, before they were born, when Mary came to Elizabeth, the babe leaped in her womb.
Look at Jeremiah. You know,
Jeremiah said,
I knew you before you were born.
I knew thee. So, no, it is not true. I mean, it's true that oxygen enters into the lungs after birth, but they're still being oxygenated from the mother. They are definitely alive. They're definitely a human being. There are brain waves. There's heartbeat. There's movement. They suck their thumb. You know,
We don't know for sure if there's a soul or not in there, and the Bible says that there isn't until the body is
formed. That's not what it says. What
it
verse?
Says after he formed the body.
It says he breathed into him, and man became a living soul. First of all,
After he formed him out of the
dust. Yeah, you got a couple problems here, though. You got a couple problems. Man was formed from the dust of the earth. He was not conceived in his mother's womb. So you're
After he was formed, it didn't say God breathed the.
It doesn't matter. A baby's formed inside the mother's womb. A baby is formed inside the mother's womb.
Right, but I mean,
birth doesn't mean
this analogy to use and to show that scripture probably shows that there is a soul that goes. That God could probably put a soul into a body that was aborted into another one. Don't you think?
I don't see any scriptural teaching from that.
But I mean, he could. I'm sure he would. If a baby is aborted before it was actually born, he could take that soul and put it into another body that was born.
You're wanting to be God and decide what this child's going to be when they grow up and decide who lives and who dies, and I disagree. Now, after a person has committed a certain crime, then it's real clear here's God's will. But this unborn baby has committed no crimes. The parents might have committed a crime, but the baby didn't. They should be adopted out.
And if we could make a system like that where everybody would be adopted, I would be for that. But
well, you can check.
It's not working like that. But.
Well, check the statistics. I mean, there are couples in our church that have adopted people, and boy, the red tape you have to go through to adopt a child is incredible.
You got them from across seas too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's another problem.
It's a problem, right? They should ease up on the adoption laws and totally eliminate abortion. And execute rapists, and 90% of this problem goes away.
Well, I can talk from first-hand experience. I've got a first-generation family member who underwent an abortion, and it just completely devastated her. I mean, a lot of these people, they just don't understand. Yeah, let that woman abort her baby, but if you walk around and live near that woman following the years after that, it tears them apart most of the time.
They know they murdered their baby, and it eats at them.
Mm-hmm.
There are ministries that deal with the trauma after an abortion. Because they know it was a living soul inside of them, and they killed it. I mean, these people need to be comforted and helped and, you know.
They go through a process in their life, and they change it like everybody else does. You go through situations where they had a baby, and the baby did something, killed people or whatever. But, you know, you can look at both sides of it. I think it should still be made as an individual choice of the person.
Do you think the mother or the father should choose if the baby dies?
No, I think they should. The mother should choose whether or not she wants to have the child, and unless there was some sort of a guarantee system for an abortion, and maybe they should even pay some money to the person. Well, maybe that's not a good idea. They'll just have kids for the money. But
hey, Kurt.
Yeah.
What is your? Do you personally think it's a sad and depressive thing whenever someone has a miscarriage?
Do Do I think it's that?
Yeah. Well, let's come back to that after the break. We'll have to come back to that.
We got a break, folks. We'll be back in just a second.
For millions of people in Southeast Asia, December 26th will never be forgotten. The tsunami that hit 11 countries devastated millions of lives that will take decades to rebuild. Many of you have already donated money to help the needy. Lifeline, America's most trusted Christian telecom company, has another way for you to help. No, we're not asking for donations. We're simply asking you to take what you already use, internet service, and put your daily web surfing to work, changing lives. Call and switch to Lifeline Internet now. Get fast, filtered surfing for as little as $9.95 per month and help places such as Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Thailand while the doors are open so wide. At Lifeline, we donate a portion of your internet bill to relief ministries that you choose, and we've been doing it for almost 15 years.
Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help. Truth
Hi,
Radio.
I'm Lee Strobel, author of The Case for. As you know, evolution and naturalism are taught in public schools as scientific truth. But in my book, The Case for a Creator, I reveal the evidence from science that clearly indicates God is the architect of the universe and the author of life. I've explored 6 different scientific disciplines and interviewed key experts for the latest data. Wherever I look, the evidence points straight toward God as our creator. Consider the evidence from biochemistry. Charles Darwin said if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, his theory would absolutely break down. Well, biochemist Michael Behe has found just that. Behe has successfully dismantled Darwin's theory through his description of irreducibly complex molecular machines. These complicated microscopic contraptions, such as cilia and bacterial flagella, are very unlikely to have been built piece by piece through Darwinian processes. These contraptions had to be fully present in order to function. Other examples include the incredible system of transporting proteins within cells and the intricate process of blood clotting. More than just a devastating challenge to Darwinism, these amazing biological systems, which far exceed the capacity of human technology, point toward a transcendent creator. Behe said his conclusion can be summed up in a single word, design. He believes that irreducibly complex systems are strong evidence of a purposeful, intentional design by an intelligent agent. As you can see, there's plenty of new scientific evidence that affirms the universe was created by God. Read The Case for a Creator or visit caseforacreator.com and prepare yourself for meaningful discussions about intelligent design. And if you think this evidence from biochemistry was compelling, you should hear the proof from biology.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind here and Jonathan Sampson at July 19th, 2005. And we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And you can join us by calling 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466. I'm still getting a ring back to you, Jonathan. Is that turn the speakers away maybe or something? There. I don't know what's going on here. There. And then go to extension 136. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. AOL, instant message, DrDinoLive. We still have Kurt on the phone there?
I'm here, yeah.
From Tucson, Arizona, huh?
Hey, yeah.
Pretty dry and hot in Tucson. What's the temperature out there today?
I think it's a little cooler today. It's probably around 100 right now.
Yesterday it was
around
what?
Around 100, between 105 and 110 the last 30 days.
So say, when I lived over in... When I lived over in Cottonwood, Arizona, we were going to the Phoenix Zoo once, my family and I, and I believe it was like 125 degrees out there just that day. I mean, my brother and I, we were probably 5-6 years old. We were sitting in the back of the truck crying because it's so hot, just wanting a snow cone or something.
I was at the Atlanta airport yesterday coming back from New York, and I met a bunch of guys who just got back from Iraq, and they were telling me it's incredible. And of course, they got not only the heat, they got to wear this bulletproof vest and all this stuff, you know, carry their luggage and stuff around with them. Miserable. Anyway, go ahead. You're asking about abortion. We're not getting the ring now, so that's better. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I can't remember where exactly we left off at, but...
I asked you if a miscarriage is an unfortunate thing.
Is it an unfortunate thing? It is an unfortunate thing if the woman wanted the baby.
Was it an unfortunate thing that the probability of that baby growing up and doing something amazing as well?
Well, if it was a miscarriage, I think God could have prevented that if he wanted the baby to grow up, right? I mean, that's a miscarriage is something that happens either from an injury to the woman, which, you know, it goes back to that verse in the Bible, the controversial verse about whether or not abortion is good or not, but who knows? If God wanted it to be born, he would have made it. He would have made it an available option for that to happen. He would have.
I don't know if that's a safe way of going. For instance, you know, the person that was in my family who had the abortion, there were several problems with the baby because of drug usage, things that the mother was doing.
Okay. Well, then she probably shouldn't have had the baby to begin with. She probably should have been more careful.
So you're saying it's irresponsible for a person to even get in that position?
Yeah, probably from her perspective, and if that was what caused it, yeah, she probably should have used more birth control or something to prevent that from happening in the first place.
Even some birth control kills the baby. And that's the birth control for some processes.
Yeah, well, everything, you know, kills something to some degree. You know, living too long will make you die of old age, so...
Well, okay.
Everything will eventually kill somebody eventually.
Well, but then
we can always come up with something.
You're kind of mixing it there, though. You're saying living old enough, you kind of wear out and die, is equivalent to taking a bill and killing an offspring. That's two completely different ways of dying. You know, one of them you've pretty much spent yourself. You've got 90 years on this planet. You know, you had a lot of time to please the Lord, and you're saying that's equivalent to just, you know, offing somebody.
That opens up a whole new bag of worms there. You know, you could say, well, is driving a motorcycle a good thing to do? Because a lot of times I can die in an automobile accident a lot easier. Anything. You can go up to just about anything about not living an absolutely perfect life. There's always a risk of something.
Well, let's get back on topic. How does that apply to abortion and the question you called about?
How does what specifically not?
Yeah, I think we're getting a little off topic. We've got other people want to get on the program here. So I guess your question is, how can we be for capital punishment and be against abortion?
Yeah, sure. And I think we already covered some of that.
Okay.
But
now, for me personally, I don't know if I'm for capital punishment, but I can see the vast difference there. Capital punishment is the effect of what's already been caused. Somebody already did something, so they're being punished for that.
Right.
Abortion is killing a child that has done nothing.
But again, we all have done something wrong, and that's the thing I think that a lot of
I agree. That's why I said I don't know if I'm for capital punishment or not.
Okay,
but I'm saying they're just not equivalent on those grounds because on one hand you got the person who is subject to capital punishment who's already done the wicked deed.
Right.
And of course I'm just as worthy to be killed. You know, the wages of sin is death. I deserve death just as much as anybody else. But that's not equivalent to saying. You know, that's the same as just killing a baby before it's born.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Do you guys want to discuss another topic?
Go ahead. I have to go quickly.
Okay,
other folks want to get on the program, so go ahead. Can we get one more question?
Okay. I'm a theistic evolutionist. I think I don't have a problem with the theory of evolution. But I think one of the reasons why I agree, I say that is because we have a law of natural selection, right?
Okay.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So in an example of what we do in society, now I don't know what your viewpoint is on some of these things. Like, for example, having certain laws that protect stupid people from killing themselves.
Like Darwin Awards.
I think God gave us that evolution as something to pretext to look at. To follow, that shows us if we follow certain laws, we'll succeed in life. And if we don't, we will
self-destruct. And I think that is a good, I think, a good reason for believing in evolution, just for us to look at from that God gave us.
Well, you have to define evolution. I don't think that's the same thing as they mean by evolution. Process will not create anything new. It may keep dumb people from passing on their genes, but it doesn't create a new species or a new kind of animal.
Well, you don't know that.
Well, there's no evidence that it does, so I guess the burden of proof is on those who wish us to think that it does, because, you know, to say we don't know that it happened, therefore it must happen, that's not good science. Good science says, here's the observation, here's the test, I can show you that it happens. And we don't ever see any animal produce anything other than its kind.
Right.
It can even be somebody who's dumb, you know, like, for instance, take possums.
Yeah.
They're pretty dumb.
We don't know that yet. We can't say that just because we don't have evidence right now, that means it didn't happen. 1,000 years ago, we didn't have a lot of evidence for things that we now know that are true.
But then, you know, how many, you got to take that to its extreme, though. Just because we don't have evidence for it doesn't mean it didn't happen, and therefore we should teach it like it did. Because that's what they do. I mean, I can make up my own theory that doesn't have any evidence either and claim that it should be taught as though it was fact.
So what happens, though, if eventually, I know you can't, one time in your seminar, you said you would not believe in a God so stupid that he would use evolution to create us.
Correct. That'd be a cruel God.
What happens?
Number one, it's a cruel God. Number two, it's not what the Bible says. Number three, there's no evidence for evolution anyway. So why are we compromising?
What happens under a few years, they come up with some absolute truthful evidence that evolution did happen?
Give an example.
What are you going to do then?
I'm not worried. What are you going to do if the world stops spinning and all the oceans spill up over and drown all the trees? I'm just saying,
what happens if evolution is proven? What if they come up with some evidence that shows it does prove? What are you going to do with God then?
Well, are you, by that question, admitting that so far it has not been proven?
No, I'm just saying from your perspective, you don't accept the evidence without it. But what happens if there is proof that they do find some evidence that does show that evolution did happen?
What are you
going to do with God?
Can you first define what you mean by evolution, then maybe give like a hypothetical evidence?
Well, there's evolution, the evolutionary process that we got. Everything started from...
So you're talking about common ancestry, all the way back to a single cell?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so far it's been 150 years of looking for this evidence, and it hasn't happened. So I guess I'm not
saying
worried.
If it does. I'm just saying if it does happen, if they do find it, what are you going to do then with?
Well, I'd have to, accommodate that, or say, see, everything so far they've used is lies. There's a whole bunch of lies used to support this evolution theory. So all they've come up with so far is dumb ideas or just bold-faced lies. So I'm not the least bit worried that it's going to happen.
What if they did?
What
are you going to be? Are you going to become an atheist? What I'm saying is, are you going to become an atheist?
What if the world stops spinning? You know, you can't. These what if questions, hypothetical stuff. This isn't science.
I'd be safe. I think it'd be generous to say if they did find some ground-shaking, undeniable truth for evolution. You know, that it doesn't change what the Bible says.
Okay.
I mean,
you just said that it doesn't affect what the Bible doesn't.
If man interprets this as undeniable truth, that does not make it undeniable truth. But so you look at all these atheists today who don't even want to talk about truth. They talk about things being provisionally true. They're true from what we understand now. So there's no way that you could ever say they're going to come up with something that's undeniably true, you know, perfectly founded.
Well, see, it sounds like you must be a Democrat because you're counting on what's going to come in for income to pay for the bills rather than a Republican who says, let's take what's in the bank and pay the bills. You're looking for evidence that might come in to support the theory, and meanwhile, you're going to believe in the theory. Well, I want to see the evidence first, and then I'll believe it. So far...
Yeah. Well, I'm an independent, so...
Okay.
All right. Democrat.
Anyway, appreciate you calling. Any other questions?
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Call anytime.
Okay.
All right, folks, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant messages, as many have, and I'm getting way behind here, Jonathan. Let me take some of these here. This guy writes, says, I watched the Fox Series 24, which is a good television technically and storyline-wise, but it does contain deceit, blasphemy, violence, anger, malice, etc. I wouldn't agree to being involved in Harry Potter. The Children's Wizardry book, because the Bible is very clear on the topic of wizards and evil, in the form... I thought I did. Let's see. Oh, okay. I didn't get all the way up there. Buzz, UK 234. Okay, here we go. This is a long one. He sent you four messages, Jonathan, and you pasted them all.
He sent me two, but
you pasted them. Okay.
They were too long for me to send, so I had to break them four.
Right. Here we go. Buzz writes from UK, United Kingdom, for those of you that didn't take geography or went to a public school. We'll help you out here. Although off topic, what are your thoughts on Christians playing computer games, specifically first-person shooters? Jonathan, you ought to answer this question.
I play them, yeah.
They're fun.
Well, some of them, there are some of them that are just incredibly wicked. For instance, in high school, I had one called Quake. And I installed it on my computer, and I was playing it, and then my mom came in and checked it out. And she was like, well, you know, close it down, we got dinner, or something like that. So whenever I went to close it, up pops this screen that says, if you close this program, we'll summon Satan all over your hard drive. And I never even thought about it, but during the game, whenever you're running around, there's the little, like, parts where you get power-ups and stuff like that. They're little pentagrams on the ground. So Quake is one of these real popular ones. It's wicked. I mean, just satanic. And so, of course, my mom slapped me in the head and told me to uninstall it, so I did.
Okay. I don't play them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen, you know, I've seen a lot of people play them, go around shooting everybody. And okay, this guy says, as a Christian, I play Halo and Unreal Tournament 2004. I don't know what those are.
Halo is the one I play. It's Marine, and Unreal is a futuristic Marine game. Yeah.
Going around shooting everybody, picking
well,
up guns.
Unreal, both of them, you're fighting alien races.
Okay.
And Unreal, you're actually going through space and stuff like that.
Okay. So what do I think about those? I don't know. I do think that kind of stuff could have certainly a negative effect on people. Obviously, it does. A lot of the kids who commit these violent crimes in schools, you know, are real big into these games. I don't know that that causes it, but it certainly doesn't help any. Okay. Let's see, are they playing these games morally wrong in God's view? I don't know. Probably. I have to give that a probably. Thou shalt not kill, which leads me to wonder if by playing the games I cause my opponents to anger through beating them, for example, whilst playing. Many Christians and websites, ChristianAnswers.net, will say that these games are okay, but I'm worried that morality, there's no line as Doom 3 would be said to be a no-no for Christians.
Yeah, I wouldn't even play Doom 3. It's not a bad one. Yeah.
And UT-204 and Halo is okay.
At all.
Like I said, I don't play it. I got too many other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, it's a time waster.
Mm-hmm.
If it's violent and it causes you to, you know, react that way in real life, then it certainly would be bad. Plus, does this relate to films I watch, which contain the violence, that's where it led, Harry Potter. Yeah, I don't like Harry Potter at all. I haven't seen any of the books. I saw a few minutes of one of the movies, and I've read some about them, what they teach. And, yeah, it's wizardry, it's evil, it's wicked, and I wouldn't get involved. Why people are buying this, I don't know. To me, they put that money towards some missionary or something. Okay, let's see. And morally, should I play the games I have stated from God's view? Many thanks on a controversial topic, fictional Joe Burrows from the UK. Joe, you certainly could err on the side of safety and just not do it and, you know, go read your Bible and go win somebody to Christ and use that time because those things suck you in and absorb hours and hours and hours of your time. Even if they're not evil, I mean, I think they maybe are, but even if they're not, they're time wasters. You know, you could be doing so much good for the cause of Christ. Okay. Is there a phone? Jonathan, somebody on the phone?
Yeah, we do. We actually
Okay, let's get the phone working here. I got a few more musing aloud and flam cheesy and everybody else. I'll be with you as quick as I can. Who's on the phone there?
We've got Grant on the phone. Wanted to comment on the earlier discussion with Kurt.
Grant, go ahead.
Yeah, I was commenting on the session with Kurt. I really don't see any comparison between putting down a murderer, someone who has committed a crime, destroyed another life physically, and several other lives emotionally, or the lives of his family, knowing that their son or their father or whatever will be in jail for the rest of his life or killed, and then the lives of the victim. And between that of taking an innocent life.
I didn't understand the connection either. I don't see. There's just no connection.
The Bible makes it very clear. One of the seven things God hates, God goes out of his way and names seven things that are utter abomination to him. And one of them is the hands that shed innocent blood.
Sure. Now, notice it says innocent blood. I mean, if somebody's obviously guilty, then it's different.
Yes. I mean, he brought up the argument of whether or not the fetus is an actual person. Medical textbooks describe a fetus as a human being, and if you're not convinced with that, go see the movie The Silent Scream. Oh, you don't think that fetus is a living human being.
That movie's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't seen myself. I've heard the descriptions, and I've got a very vivid imagination, so.
Yeah, it shows babies in the process of abortion where they put inject the salt, or, you know, they come in and execute them. We got a break right now. Yeah, Silent Scream will definitely change your mind about is this a living human being. We'll be back in 1 minute, folks. Join us in 1 minute.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418, that's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help.
Okay, Frank, with 10,000 feet in the air, why did you bring me here?
Well, you're always saying that trying to get into heaven without trusting the sacrifice Jesus made is like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute.
Yeah, God is holy. You know you've sinned. Jesus paid the penalty for your sin. If you don't accept that payment by trusting Jesus, when you die, it will be like jumping out of a plane without a parachute.
Wrong! Instead of using a parachute, I set up a trampoline in my backyard.
Frank, you're taking this analogy way too seriously.
Well, I can get into heaven by being good. I don't need Jesus. Man, that's a long ways down.
I thought you were going to jump.
Are you kidding? Without a parachute?
Well, I'm glad you realized that before you jumped. Now, about Jesus.
You know there's a God. You know you've sinned. What will it take for you to stop trusting your good deeds and start trusting Jesus? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the last segment of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. You're welcome to join us at 850-479-DINO. This is July 19th of 05, and we're live, very much alive here in Pensacola, Florida. Come visit drdino.com or dinosauradventureland.com, or come visit the real Dinosaur Adventureland. It's the neatest place on planet Earth. Okay, Grant is on the phone, and go ahead, Grant, your floor.
All right, anyway, I was just talking about Kirk's argument, and he compared... He said, basically, that it was hypocrisy to be for capital punishment, but also to be pro-life. And I strongly disagree with that, because you're comparing that of a guilty life, someone who's committed one of the most abominable crimes in our society, or in any society, civilized society, and I'm not talking about headhunters, and that of an innocent life, someone who hasn't done anything wrong. Ever.
Yeah, his assumption was, well, they might become an evil, bad person. Well, you don't know that. There's no way to tell. People from bad families turn out good, and good families turn out bad. There's no way to tell
it's
that.
It's just as probable they might grow up and, you know, find a cure for cancer or something like that.
Yeah, I think if you're going to use that all, you may need to take a good look at Oprah Winfrey. Talk about rags from riches. Rags
well,
riches.
Let's just kill everybody. That way we're sure to get them all, those that would be bad, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, thanks for calling. Any other questions?
Oh, yeah, y'all were talking about a video game?
Yes, sir.
Well, here's my opinion on this. If you look at your physical body, there are four kinds of foods. You have nutritious foods, foods that are good for you, foods that are beneficial to your body. You have neutral foods, foods that really don't affect you one way or the other, just kind of pointless, like gum. And you have junk food, which is food that it tastes good, but it's really not all that good for you. You don't need to eat too much of it. And then you have outright poisons.
Right.
And I think that applies to your spiritual life, too. You have nutritious foods. You have your Bible reading, going to church, praying. you have, say, neutral food, stuff that really doesn't matter away, like, say, listening to secular music that is not anti-God. Then you have junk food, stuff like violent video games, which I think that it's not a sin to play a violent video game, provided that the content is not just downright anti-God like Doom or Grand Theft Auto, where you're running around raping hookers, beating up people, and shooting cops. And
yeah, good point. Which is surprisingly one of the most popular games out there today, too.
Yeah, just shows you where our society is today.
Yeah, right. Well, if you listen to the rap music, too, and just write the words down that they're saying. Or yeah, even a lot of the rock music. Just write down the words and read them. It'll scare you, you know?
It will.
Yeah, well, good. Good point. All right, appreciate you calling.
Okay.
All right, call anytime. Thanks a lot. Okay,
thank
folks,
you.
If you want to be on the program, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, and we have about 12 minutes left. You can still call in and go to extension 136 or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. Okay, Musing Aloud writes in, hello, Jonathan, just wondering if Dr. Oven realized that on his slide titled, If You Died Today, Where Would You Go?, he has a small child on the road to hell. I present the seminar series here in Canada, and someone pointed it out to me. I have photoshopped the picture to erase the child. I don't know if this is a concern to Dr. Hovind, but I thought I would notify you just in case. If Dr. Hovind wants this slide, let me know, and I'll send it sometime later. Take care, brother. Good point. I did not do that slide, but it's certainly children who have reached whatever age it is, when they become accountable for their own sin, they have to be saved. In the book of Acts chapter 16, the Philippian jailer, you know, it says that he got saved and his house. We would assume that would be children, I guess. So I would say it probably would vary from child to child and maybe vary quite a bit, but somewhere between 4 and 8, you know, maybe even probably 4 or 5 or 6, you know, they're accountable. They know when they've sinned, and they have to be saved or they do go to hell. So I'll have to take a look at the picture and see, you know, how old we can estimate this child to be, but that's a good point. A baby should not be in that picture, but the child certainly could be in that picture. Got a ring again, Jonathan.
Yep, we've got Eric on the phone.
Eric, go ahead, Eric.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You know, I wish I would have heard it all, but I only heard I talked to him off the end about video games.
Yes, sir.
And like Grand Theft Auto. No, I don't know if you ever played it, but
I have. I've played all three.
And aren't they pretty fun, Jonathan?
No, they're fun to your carnal flesh.
Come on.
Well, no. Let me say this. Fun to your carnal flesh. It is fun to steal a car and drive it around, but if you look at it from a spiritual perspective, you are having sex with hookers, you are running around with a flamethrower and rocket launchers, blowing up ambulances, cop cars, killing innocent people, sniping civilians from the top of buildings for no particular reason. You look at most of the people who play this game, there are goals set out. You go steal this car, take it back to the mafia leader. Most of the people who play it, they just get in the car and plow over civilians and just kill people. That's all you do.
So
is it fun to the flesh? Well, I suppose adultery is fun to the flesh, and even
look at Eve,
mass murder.
Eve looked at the fruit. It was pleasing to the eye.
It is. I think it's just plain fun. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, you know, having sex with hookers, maybe that's, you know, adult content and probably not appropriate. But, you know, anything else, just going on a rampage, you know, it's just fun. I mean, what's really wrong with that?
You're asking two different questions. Is it fun or is it good?
Well, I assume that there's really nothing wrong with it. I mean, you know, and people are like, oh, violence in video games today. Oh, you know what? That's crap.
Well, if you look
it's not really affecting many people.
If you look at the third, have you played the third Grand Theft Auto? San Andreas. Every other word in there is the F word. Every other one.
Uh-huh.
That's all it is. You shoot people, their blood goes shooting all over the place. Which, you know, I don't know my position on, you know, first-person shooter games.
Yeah, that's fun.
But, you know, I guess if you think it's fun, that's a relative thing.
Jonathan, you told me you just played all three. You think it's pretty fun.
I've played all three. That doesn't mean I enjoy playing them.
Oh, no, even if you enjoy playing them.
Even if you do.
You bought all three.
No, I did not buy all three. No, I did not buy them.
The question is it right? I went and visited at Jonesboro, Arkansas. I went to the prison and visited the two boys who did the shooting at Jonesboro Elementary School. Mm-hmm. They had been hooked on video games and been playing this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, they just they didn't really realize they were shooting real people down there. They shot, I don't know, like 21 people and killed.
I really think that's because of the video game.
That's what they said. I mean,
they can say all the things they want.
Well,
because they're going to life in prison. But you have to look at it, Ken. But I've got other things. I was just kind of defending that. I mean, it's just a video game. It's fun.
Well, okay, let me ask you a real quick question. How old are you, Eric?
17.
17? Okay, whenever you're 35 and you have an 8-year-old kid, would you let him play Grand Theft Auto 3 where every other word is the F word? He can have sex with prostitutes?
Well,
is it a little different than... Is it appropriate for children to play?
Well, define children. I mean, an age here. I mean, age.
What age? 14-year-old and younger. 14 and down. Just wondering, regardless if it's fun
probably
or not, is it appropriate?
Probably not.
Okay. Okay. What's your other question, Eric?
You always try to get people to admit things, and I don't even know why. You try to get them to admit things, and I never really found much of a purpose for it, but I'm going to get you to admit something today.
Well, you just called in to get Jonathan to admit it was fun to play the game. I mean, duh. Go ahead. That's your question.
And you just admitted that it was inappropriate for 14 and younger to play the game. So. Anyway, go ahead. We want to hear the question.
All right. Now, you think it's possible for life out of nothing to happen? Like, you know, you always, like, it rained on the rocks. It has, you know, the primordial soup. Do you think it's possible for life to come from that?
No, sir. I think that's one of the dumbest ideas in the world.
It's not even possible.
Not even
possible.
Well, what's the process? There's zero evidence it could happen. There are multiple barriers to prevent it from happening.
I think he might be trying to sneak around here. Life from nothing is possible with God. That is a process. There's someone
actually
doing
this. Meant...
You're talking about without God?
Yes.
Okay,
I'm not talking about origin of everything. I'm just talking about of life on a particular planet. Now... I remember, let's say DNA, origin of DNA from nothing. Now, I heard you often give, like, a probability. It's a billion to one or something, or it's 0.0000.
It should probably truthfully be a probability of zero. There is no chance of it happening.
If there's at least the smallest bit of chance that it could happen.
Okay, is there a chance that you could flip coins, flip 20 billion coins, and all of them land on heads? Is there a chance?
Yes.
One chance out of whatever 2 to the 20 billionth power is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But anything past 1 to the 50th is considered never going to happen.
Well, now, Ken, even if there is a chance out there, think of it this way. How many planets are there in the universe?
Nine
planets.
Nine that we know of. Other ones.
You often give the statistic, people estimate that there's some number of trillion stars per person.
Yeah, 11 planets. Trillion per person, 76 trillion total is the current estimate. But that's stars, that's not planets.
Well, it's kind of common knowledge that on some stars you have planets.
No, it's kind of a common assumption. But there's no proof of it.
We have seen planets.
Or do you think life could arise on, you know, on the sun?
Huh?
Do you think there could be life on the sun? Is the sun hospitable to life?
I don't know.
Maybe
it's fun.
Wow.
You've been playing too many video games.
I'm not gonna give my opinion on something that I have no clue about.
But see, what you're going, you don't understand what you're doing here, but you are off into religion instead of science.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just talking about the simple probability, pretty much the simple probability of something evolving on these trillions and trillions of planets that exist.
No, you're talking about the probability of something evolving on these trillions and trillions of planets that you imagine. You don't know that any of these planets exist.
We don't know that fossils produce babies, right?
Well, where are you getting any idea that there are trillions and trillions and trillions of planets?
Why wouldn't there be?
Well, we can see 8 more from here, and we know there's no life on them. We can see 90-some moons from here, and we know there's no life on them.
Maybe you're going to deny all the astronomy when they find planets in distant galaxies?
If they find a planet here and there, listen to what you just said, Eric. If they find a planet here and there... That's irrelevant. You just said there are trillions and trillions and trillions of planets.
None have been proven to exist yet except these nine.
And, I mean, even if they find 30 more, I don't care. You just said trillions and trillions and trillions.
Okay, let's suppose there are trillions of other planets.
Uh-huh.
That would be a religious statement, not a scientific statement.
Oh, you got to be kidding me, Ken.
What's your observational evidence?
Where's the evidence? Science deals with things we can observe, study, test, and demonstrate. There is no observation that says there's other planets.
You're telling me there's no observation. They have not found another planet
revolving
around another star.
You're saying trillions. That's different.
Okay. What they have seen, Eric, if you study this, they have seen stars that have a wobble, and they assume there's a gravitational tug of a planet. There is no direct observational evidence of any other planet other than these nine. It's really hard to see Pluto. It wasn't even discovered until 1930, and it's in our solar system. Our sun is 8 light minutes away. The next star is 4.5 light years away. That's the closest star. After that, they get a whole lot further.
I think there's something wacky.
So you can believe there's planets out there, and there might be. I'm not saying there aren't. I'm just saying, as far as science goes, we can't prove it. So it's not science. So it's a religion.
Uh-huh.
And even if there's planets, we know the narrow band of things required for life to happen. It's incredible the number of parameters have to come in. The distance from the sun, the gravitational pull of the planet. Earth is just the right size, just the right distance from the sun. Speed spins around at just the right speed. If we were spinning faster or slower, life wouldn't be here. If we were further like Mars or closer like Venus.
Well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't life exist if we were a little further from the sun?
Well, Mars is 1.5 astronomical units, 50% further. There's no life there. It's too cold. Venus is 0.7 astronomical units, 30% closer. There's no life there. It's too hot. There's a very narrow band where life is possible.
I think it's possible for life to exist on a planet anywhere. I mean, by what?
You've been watching too much Star Trek. Eric, we're done for the day. Sorry about that. Time's up. Call us tomorrow. We'll continue this discussion. Be glad to have you. The rest of you folks waiting on the instant message, sorry about that. We'll get to you tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Join us then. Bye-bye.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
And the rooms had what you'd expect a bedroom to have.
It's tough for you?
They had cutouts and alphabets and animals on the wall and toys, and the kids were there, and they seemed to be serene and healthy and clean.
That was the passionate voice of Attorney Dick Gagarin, who defended the Branch Davidians. You remember that incident in Waco, Texas? Never resolved, because no one has ever been called to account for that series of crimes. Truth Radio is here to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future. We need your support. Our address is P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444.